Putin?
We've asked the question before. Does Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine put superpowers on a collision course? With the revelation that Iran's supplying Russia with not just drones, but ballistic missiles, allies strongly suggest that a UK-US summit in Washington Friday could, on the quiet, mean the end to the Biden administration's restrictions on Ukraine using the long-range missiles it provides for strikes deep inside of Russia. Already, Kyiv has grown bolder in response to the Kremlin's relentless targeting of its critical infrastructure. Drones this week hitting a military airport near Moscow and aiming for bases in Murmansk, all the way on the Arctic Sea. What would be legitimate targets for U.S.-made attackums and Franco-British-made storm shadows? In view of Tehran's role, could war in the Middle East and tensions in Eastern Europe conflate into one? On that score, we'll hear what the candidates for U.S. president had to say in their Tuesday showdown. How is that electoral campaign weighing on the military campaign between Russia and Ukraine today in the France 24 debate? Is it sky's the limit for Ukraine's long-range weapons? Joining us from Odessa, defense analyst Hannah Shaless, director of the security programs at the Ukrainian PRISM think tank. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Anastasia Shapochkina teaches at the French Political Science Institute, Sciences Po, president of the Eastern Circles think tank. Good to see you.
Thank you.
France 24 Chief International Affairs Editor Robert Parsons is with us. How are you?
Okay, I'm good.
I'm okay. And from our former Moscow correspondent, Nick Holdsworth, these days hangs his hat in Berlin. Great to see you.
Guten Abend.
If you're on the go, you can listen to the show. That's right, listen to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. That's a reminder. Let's start with the latest, and the latest is that Ukraine's presidents confirmed what's already being reported by monitors, that Russia has begun its counteroffensive. This after last month's surprise incursion into Kursk region, Moscow stating that it's retaken some 10 settlements.
Russians have launched counteroffensive actions, which is in line with our Ukrainian plan. As for Belarus, the concentration of troops was seen a long time ago. No.
Anastasia Shapochkina, what's the surprise? Is it a surprise that it's taken 5 weeks for the Russians to launch this counteroffensive?
The Russians have been notorious in reacting slowly to all of the extraordinary events that they have experienced. And even the march of Prigozhin in last year was also rather at a slow reaction of Vladimir Putin. Before this, there were any single event which looked threatening or looked unexpected, from the Kursk submarine drowning to this. What we're seeing now, the surprise invasion of Kursk by Ukraine, took time to react, and it's logical. They had to relocate their troops. They tried different types of troops. They settled on the troops they relocated from the east of Ukraine around the Kharkiv region, and now they're ready to retake it. Okay, let's let them try it. Yeah.
Hannah Shaless, we're looking at those bits in blue on the map. There are the areas that Ukraine's been occupying since early August. Is the idea just to draw in a lot of Russian soldiers and relieve the heat on the Eastern Front, or does Ukraine want to keep that territory?
No, definitely. Ukraine is not the state that is taking other territories, and there were several quite clear on the first-hand task for that operation. To take some of the forces from the east of Ukraine, yes, it was important, but even more important it was to create a gray zone on the north of Ukraine, because we saw for the last few months how Russians been accumulating their forces to some attacks against the Sumy and Kharkiv region. If the Kharkiv attack a few months ago failed, however, Russians didn't reject this idea. Moreover, the concentration of the forces near Sumy region resulted in daily heavy attacks against different villages and towns of Sumy. So pushing back Russians at least for 40 kilometers immediately limited their capabilities from the short-range missiles to the long-range missiles in attacking those Ukrainian territories. So gray zone, but I would say that's probably even more important than just withdrawing some of the Russian forces from Pokrovsk, where we had the heavy fighting on the east.
Yeah, Pokrovsk, where it's been tough the last couple of days. The fighting, very heavy. They're without gas for cooking. Drinking water has been knocked out. The last 24 hours have been brutal for Ukrainians there. Meanwhile, the International Committee of the Red Cross confirming the death of three staff members at an aid distribution site some 12 kilometers away from the front line in Donetsk region. Now, this works both ways. When we talked about Ukraine last week, it was seen as a big morale boost after after the summer, this incursion in Kursk. Earlier this week, Kiev's forces hitting multiple points inside Russia from the air, with the Moscow area airports forced to divert flights on Tuesday. One resident killed on the outskirts of the capital, more than 2,000 kilometers from the Ukrainian border, the Russian Arctic port of Murmansk, near the border with Norway. For the second time in as many months, presumed Ukrainian drones targeting what Kyiv says has been a launch site for missiles in the war.
All necessary measures to improve security are being taken, and air defense systems are working to destroy enemy drones.
Robert Parsons, there's a bit of confusion over what exactly has happened in Murmansk this week.
Yeah, it's not clear what's happened because, first of all, the distance involved. Murmansk is 2,000 kilometers away from the border with Ukraine. According to the Ukrainians' own estimation of the capabilities of any of the drones that they've got, the maximum distance that they could reach is 1,800 kilometers. Although it has to be said that there was an attack on an airfield near Murmansk not that long ago as well. So perhaps the that distance can be extended. But it's certainly causing panic in the Murmansk area. It's interesting that he should say now that they use all means to strike against any intrusive aircraft. They've been striking against light aircraft flying in the skies above Murmansk. Absolutely nothing to do with Ukraine.
Local reports that two of them had to make an emergency landing.
They had to make emergency landings, yeah.
Right. So, but again, it's this. Who's winning the psychological war is the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's who knows at this stage. Certainly, the Ukrainians are putting up a pretty good battle in that respect. The fact that they, from almost nothing, have managed to answer Russia's massive air superiority in such a way that they're able to take the fight so deep into Russian territory is an enormous achievement, just as their achievement has been in pushing back the Russian Navy in the Black Sea. These are big achievements. They're not enough. The fact that they're able to send drones with relatively light payloads into Russia is not a substitute for the sort of missiles that Ukraine is asking for from its Western allies at the moment. It's not the same as ATACMS, for instance, which can reach, in some cases, well over 300 kilometers and deliver a massive payload. That is what the Ukrainians really, really need. They've been very effective with their drones. The attacks on airfields that you've just mentioned all over Russia, not just to the north, but far to the east as well. But also on oil depots, on ammunition dumps, which have an immediate and quite substantial effect on the Russian war effort.
Yeah, it's a substantial effect on the Russian war effort. And we're seeing some worry on the part of the Russian president. He has stated that long-range arms for Kyiv would mean, I'll put it to you, Nick Holdsworth, quote, that NATO countries are at war with Russia. Those are the words in the past couple of hours from Vladimir Putin.
This is nothing new from Vladimir Putin. The Kremlin has been peddling this line throughout the war since the very earliest days, basically accusing NATO of being party to the war. The propaganda message in Russia has been that this is a war between Russia and the West. So there's nothing new in that. Indeed, the Americans in particular have been very, very cautious. Vladimir Putin's laid down all kinds of red lines, and the Americans have been respecting those pretty much so far. Although each time they've pushed that red line, introducing battle tanks, various handheld surface-to-air missiles, etc., the Russians haven't responded with the rhetoric which they've repeated previously. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if indeed, as we suspect, will happen when the Americans give the go-ahead to use these medium-range weapons. We're talking about weapons that can strike, as Rob just said, up to about 300 kilometers inside Russia, which is actually not nearly as far as Ukraine has already reached with its drones, although, of course, these missiles will be much more accurate and carry a bigger payload. We saw this a couple of days ago, residential areas 30 kilometers away from the Kremlin on the fringes of Moscow hit by drones. Now, it may be that those drones might have been hit by anti-aircraft fire or may just not be very accurate, and that's certainly a very long way from the Ukrainian border that those drones have had to fly. So Ukraine's argument is very much that if they get these more accurate weapons with heavier payloads, they'll be able to use fewer missiles, less easy to detect on the Russian side, and hit the targets more accurately that they need to hit to take out those command and control centers and launch sites for all these weapons, ballistic missiles, etc., that Russia is using against Ukrainians' infrastructure and civilian population at the moment.
It's a red line that the United States has been reluctant to pass, but NATO allies, as well as the European Union, have been upping the tone in the past week. This after fresh revelations of Iran shipping ballistic missiles to Moscow. The UK and US foreign ministers, their visit Wednesday to Kyiv, interpreted as an event that wouldn't have happened unless Washington and London hadn't already approved, on the quiet, the use of their long-range missiles further inside of Russia. As for the U.S. Secretary of State, he stopped off this Thursday in neighboring Poland before returning to Washington for that Friday summit that's due to bring together Joe Biden, Keir Starmer, and Volodymyr Zelensky. Blinken, as usual, measuring his words.
As we go forward, we will do exactly what we have already done, which is we will adjust, we'll adapt as necessary, including with regard to the means that are at Ukraine's disposal to effectively defend against the Russian aggression.
Anastasia Shapochkina, British media reporting that there won't be some big announcement. In fact, they've scrapped a press conference on Friday. But do you think that there's already the green light for this red line to be crossed?
I think that the very important and dynamic of the war change was brought by Ukrainians, by the use of the sea drones, by the use of the UAVs. Yes, they don't make the damage, as you have affirmed correctly, that the desired damage, the total damage, but they bring the battle toward Russia, which used to be in the first 2 years, the battle always waged in the territory of Ukraine, bringing the battle more and more toward Russia, bringing the chaos in Russia, really changes it for the Russians. When they can feel the heat, they can now deal with tens of thousands of population to move inside their own country, and the rest of the country seeing those refugees. So that's okay, important. However, this other, now the ball is in the yard, so to say, of the allies, because Russia is not fighting alone. It's a coalition of countries, including North Korea, including Iran, including China, and the same punch should be felt from the coalition of countries, including the United States, including the European Union, other allies, and that's what now Ukraine is asking for. I don't think there a big press conference is needed for that to happen. Actually, it would be way better if that so-called permission was given without any press conference, had been given long ago, and if everybody had denied that they've been giving it, and Ukraine would have launched the strikes anyway. That would be a worthy answer because, as Nick has noted rightly, Russia has been fighting NATO not only for the last months, it's been fighting NATO before it started invading full-scale Ukraine in February 2022. It's been announcing it's been fighting NATO and it's been seeking the new agreements of security architecture with the US and NATO, not with Ukraine.
All right. Hot off the presses, we can listen to Vladimir Putin, again, reacting to this. Listen to what he has to say about NATO.
It is not a question of allowing the Ukrainian regime to strike Russia with these weapons or not to allow it. It is about making a decision whether NATO countries are directly involved in a military conflict or not. If this decision is made, it will mean nothing more than the direct participation of NATO countries, the United States and European countries in the Ukraine war. This is their direct participation, and this, of course, significantly changes the very essence, the very nature of the conflict.
Now, Robert Parsons, you heard Nick Holdsworth say that we've seen this movie before when it comes to Russian reactions and red lines being crossed. Still, what do you say to our viewers who are concerned that we could be sleepwalking into a direct confrontation between NATO and Russia?
Well, I don't think anybody's sleepwalking into anything. This is being very closely, tightly calibrated all the time, as we've heard Antony Blinken saying, that the position of the US on what weapons should be allowed to go to Ukraine and when is something they're looking at and changing all the time as the situation on the battlefield evolves. So the question now is, has it evolved sufficiently for the United States and its allies to give Ukraine medium-range and long-distance missiles? The feeling clearly is at the moment that it's reached that point. I would just disagree on one thing you said, though. Russia is not fighting NATO at the moment. Russia is fighting Ukrainian soldiers armed with NATO weaponry. It's not the same thing at all.
And in its rhetoric, it does. It's always been. For Russia, Ukraine doesn't exist as a country and has never existed for Putin. Yeah. And so for them, in their rhetoric, in their strategic positioning, they are fighting NATO.
But even we just heard President Putin there saying, you know, the NATO have got to consider whether they're going to get directly involved in this conflict.
He knows very well that NATO is directly involved.
Of course.
And look at that statement, where it's been even taken. It's like, looks like Putin is going between, you know, I don't know, a visit to Ural Vagonzavod and his car. And they are like, hey, would you like to make a statement? Sure, NATO is getting involved. It's like, wow, as if nobody has known, as if this is news for him, you know.
On the other side, if we're going to suspend disbelief, and I'll put it to you, Hannah Schelest, I was speaking with one Iran watcher. I said, has the West suddenly discovered that Iran is supplying ballistic missiles to Russia? He says he suspects not, but they pick this moment to go public with it. So why did they pick this moment?
There are several reasons. And first of all, I would like to support what Anastasia said about fighting with NATO, because if you follow the Russian statements for the last 2 years, in most of them, when they've been losing somewhere, they were statements of the military that they lost not to the Ukrainian forces, but for the NATO soldiers that are already fighting against Russians. And in all the negotiations, it's never been to negotiate with Kyiv regime, so-called, but with the NATO countries. So Putin is definitely in this statement, in this interviews playing with the words, including about NATO direct involvement, because when HIMARS been delivered to Ukraine, that was almost copy-paste of the wordings that no, you cannot provide HIMARS for Ukraine, you cannot provide F-16 for Ukraine. That would mean NATO is involved. So each new significant weapons that can be a game changer, or at least changing the balance of power, Putin is making the statements that that would be the last we consider NATO involved, even that when I read Russian strategic documents before 2022, it's already saying that NATO is the threat, and NATO is from whom we need to defend our land. And here it is very important not only to hear special calibrated statements of Putin, but also what other top officials of Russia are writing and saying, how they explain their actions. The whole domestic discourse is about defending Russian lands from NATO that would like to invade Russia. So that's why this statement is less for the Russians, less for Ukrainians. It was made particular to people in Paris and Berlin and Washington because they know that it still has the effect. And unfortunately, the effect that is very dangerous for Ukraine.
On the other side, Hannah, again, the West, why is it suddenly going public with its outrage over Iran providing ballistic missiles? There was even the Treasury Department announcing sanctions against the national carrier Iran Air.
There were several announcements earlier when they were suspicious that they may be delivered. And as far as we know, there were attempts in the second track or back side channels of communication to persuade Iran not to go further than Shahed provision, including because of the difficult situation in the Middle East region. They understand that for Iran, the situation is much more difficult. So it was still a hope that you can prevent Iran from going more seriously, like really giving a carte blanche for Russians. So probably those negotiations failed. And also, probably there are real proofs that these weapons were not only promised, but missiles delivered. That attack against Moscow by some of the military bloggers, information came that it was exactly to the storage facility where some of these Iranian missiles could be. So probably this moment was just to support that they can appear some of the evidences, visual evidences of these missiles being delivered to Ukraine. The same to Russia, but fighting against Ukraine. The same pattern was with North Korea. Even that we knew starting from November and Russians been demonstrating in their chats some of the North Korean ammunition. But only at a certain moment when there was understanding that it's not the accident, but the serious deal between North Korea and Russia, our Western partners made the official statement, and even South Korea, after 3 or 4 months, has acknowledged that, yes, North Korea is supplying Russia with missiles.
Mm. And so there's this context now where the West is upping its denunciation, its pushback. It's the prelude to this visit to Washington on Friday by Ukraine's president and the UK prime minister. And that visit we saw on Wednesday of Antony Blinken and David Lammy, a chance for the world to get acquainted with Britain's new Labour foreign minister. Lammy pulling no punches when it came to Vladimir Putin.
No act of authoritarianism is ever exactly the same. But 80 years after Stalin deported the Crimean Tartars, 240 years after Catherine the Great annexed Crimea, Putin has revealed the same arrogance, the same greed, the same disdain for the rights of other individuals and nations. This is imperialism, this is fascism. And this week we have been reminded of how other authoritarian regimes are aiding Putin, with Iran going even further in support for Moscow by providing ballistic missiles, a significant and dangerous escalation.
Nick Holdsworth, is it about Russia? Is it about Iran? Or is it about a Labour government that wants to prove that, just like the Conservatives, they too can support Ukraine?
Labour government has actually come under some criticism from the Ukrainians, who don't see them as being quite as forthright as the former Tory government was when it came to supporting Ukraine in statements and supporting Ukraine in fact. So it may well be some kind of response to that sense that Labour needs to step up its game. Of course, since Keir Starmer took over as Prime Minister in July, the government has been very much concerned with domestic issues, with a £22 billion hole in public finances that hadn't been accounted for by the previous government in the UK. So I think that Lammy's visit there alongside his American counterpart yesterday was very much about showing a united front. And almost certainly, as you've said earlier, the decision to allow the use of longer range weapons has already been made, and this was just a prelude to that.
Our Berlin correspondent, formerly in Moscow, Nick Holdsworth. Anastasia, we're talking about Keir Starmer, Joe Biden, Volodymyr Zelensky, all in the room together in Washington. If Volodymyr Zelensky says, great, I want those long-range missiles to take out the Kerch Strait Bridge, what does Joe Biden answer?
Joe Biden hasn't been known for being very bold in his
answers.
I think that he should answer the same kind of along the same lines as the Brits have answered, you know, just take our storm shadows and do whatever you want with them. And then they should, the Americans should say, indeed, and go ahead and help yourself. And that would truly turn the war around. If that had been done in the first 2 or 3 months in the war, we wouldn't even have been there.
But does it get us to what Vladimir Putin was predicting, which is that confrontation with NATO?
Confrontation with NATO is already happening, especially for Vladimir Putin. And it's been happening at his own initiative for the last almost 3 years. In October, we can celebrate the third anniversary of this. And because that's when it started, really, for the Russians have started.
But you're talking about an escalation that would involve something more than exists at the moment, I mean,
because let's just remind our viewers, Rob, for Ukraine, taking back the east of the country is a hard slog. Crimea, though, is very vulnerable. And this taking out of this bridge would be a major event.
Oh, for Ukraine, it's an obvious target. And when the British say you do what you want with Storm Shadow, I'm sure they understand that Ukraine will make it one of their prime targets, not necessarily their first, but certainly among the most important. It would be a huge psychological blow because it's a pet project of Vladimir Putin. But it's more than that. It's of strategic importance as well. So it's an absolutely, totally legitimate military target. My feeling is that if the Americans do decide to go ahead and green light the supply of missiles, they will say to Ukraine pretty much as the Brits have said, you decide what you're going to go for. But otherwise, they find themselves in the rather difficult positions that every time an attack is made using long-range missiles, that the Russians will assume that target has been approved, perhaps even singled out by the United States themselves.
Hannah Schalest, a bulk carrier in the Black Sea has been hit by a Russian missile, according to shipping sources, this Thursday. What kind of fresh escalation can we expect?
We just received detailed information that was the grain bulker coming from Ukraine to Egypt, and the attack happened in the Romanian territorial waters. So you understand that is also quite a serious political issue now, because previously, the last 2 weeks, we had several incidents with missiles and drones coming to Polish territory, to Lithuanian territory, territory of Romania, and all the air forces of these countries were saying that they didn't have the right or something to, or they didn't notice, they were looking for them. And in the Russian Federation, that was the evidences of the weakness of alliance and their unreadiness to defend their own territories. Now, this case should be made public with the bulker, because it is absolutely civilian, that is in the NATO territorial water, and that is the grain that Russians are talking that much, how they are protector of the food security, including for Egypt. That became one of the reasons why Egypt is taking so-called neutral position, because they say they are dependent on the Russian grain. And now the grain that is going to their country that is so important, and the ship is targeted. We understand that most probably the ship was not the goal, because that was the night of the heavy attack. And in the night, we had information that Ukrainian air defense, for example, just lost these missiles when they get out of the Ukrainian air defense space. So, but that is demonstration of the irresponsibility of the Russian forces. We always knew that their missiles are not precise, but here it is even more than non-precise. They are going that close to the break of the territorial integrity of the NATO countries. They are provoking NATO countries.
So,
they are
so checking Hannah. Their air defense. So, Hannah, I know what you want Joe Biden to say in that meeting on Friday. What do you expect him to say?
You know, here I don't hear what he would say in public if Pentagon would allow Ukraine to use the weapons even without any acknowledgement. And that would be probably the best decision for us. We need to target the places from where all these missiles are coming against us. That would be the best air defense, even better than Patriot. Because if you don't have airfields, if you don't have airplanes from which all these missiles are starting, that's definitely the best protection for the Ukrainian civilians and critical infrastructure. But what we definitely already read from the sources that Americans would like to see the list of those targets Ukraine would like to attack with the American long-range missiles. And it seems to me that Americans became a little bit softer in their decision when they realized that it is not only Ukrainian drones that are reaching quite far at the Russian territory, but also Ukraine tested successfully its first ballistic missile a few weeks ago, plus the new combined rocket drone, also with the approximately 1,000 kilometers. So that is can be a game changer when Ukrainians still would need American weapons because they are ready to use. Ours are still to produce, but it is not a game changer in terms of the technologies because Ukrainians are proving that we can produce and we can use our weapons as well.
Nick Holdsworth, you just heard Hannah there talking about the fact that you've had these errant drones, most recent example, one that fell at the start of the week or over the weekend in Latvia. What's the feeling where you are in Berlin?
Didn't quite catch the end of your question there, Francois.
Where you are in Berlin when it comes to these red lines about to move?
Well, as you know, Chancellor Scholz has been very cautious all along. The Germans were discussing whether or not to give Taurus missiles to Ukraine just a few months ago. There was that high-level Luftwaffe meeting which got hacked apparently by Russian spies. And the Luftwaffe were very clear that the only real legitimate target of such missiles would be that Kerch Bridge. I mean, the Germans have their own domestic problems at the moment. They haven't been paying quite as much close attention to Ukraine since the last week's visit to the Ramstein Air Base, and they haven't actually said anything about this current debate yet. I mean, the German public are, of course, concerned about any potential escalation, and a lot of those comments made by Vladimir Putin are aimed as much at a foreign audience as a domestic audience. We saw in the recent regional elections here where the far-right party, the AfD, gained first place in one of those elections and second place in another, that part of their debate is whether or not we should be supplying arms to Ukraine. And in fact, the far-left party, which also picked up a lot of votes in those regional elections, also doesn't think that Germany should be sending weapons to Ukraine. So, the Germans are sitting on the fence a little bit about this at the moment, although I suspect that the coalition government would quietly support any decision made by its British and American allies on the use of those longer-range weapons.
Robert Parsons.
Yeah, I think your guess is as good as mine on what's going to happen here. But looking to reading the runes, it looks to me as if an announcement will be made when they go to Washington, when Starmer and Zelensky go to Washington. You know, first of all, because of that meeting that we saw in Kyiv the other just yesterday with David Lammy, Antony Blinken, and Zelensky, the fact that they were all pretty upbeat about it, the fact that David Lammy was so critical of Russia, the fact that he used the word escalation as being something coming from the other side, not from Ukraine, but as coming from Russia by allowing the import of Iranian missiles. Vocabulary was very, very important there. I just cannot believe either that Zelensky would be invited to Washington at this point, everyone knowing what his demands are without there being something in the pipeline. And the fact that the British are saying today, you know, through the Guardian newspaper, that a deal's already been struck, that Britain is going to give Storm Shadow missiles to Ukraine regardless, makes things pretty clear. Britain would not be going down that path, I'm pretty sure, unless it thought the United States is going to do the same when that meeting happens. And if it does happen, I'm pretty sure there'll be an announcement.
You think there will be an announcement?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's, of course, another event to concentrate the minds. We're 54 days away from a U.S. election in the United States on Friday. And we heard the two candidates in a very tight race with very different views on what should happen next when it comes to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Understand why the European allies and our NATO allies are so thankful that you are no longer president. Otherwise, Putin would be sitting in Kyiv with his eyes on the rest of Europe, starting with Poland. And why don't you tell the 800,000 Polish Americans right here in Pennsylvania how quickly you would give up for the sake of favor and what you think is a friendship with what is known to be a dictator who would eat you for lunch?
I want to get the war settled. I know Zelensky very well, and I know Putin very well. I have a good relationship, and they respect your president, okay? They respect me. They don't respect Biden. We're playing with World War III, and we have a president that we don't even know if he's... Where is our president? We don't even know if he's a president.
Three times during that debate, Anastasia Shapochkina, the moderator asks Trump if he wants Ukraine to win. He never quite answers the question.
We all know the answer. Who he wants to win.
But is this, let's cut to the chase here, is this the reason why those red lines are about to move? Is it because the election
Robert
is so
was
tight?
Speaking, just as Robert was speaking, I think exactly like the, what's moving the liberal, the Socialist Party in Great Britain to exhibit such valor right now is the same motive that's moving the Americans right now. And the Labour Party should show that they are tough. Because for me, also, first and foremost, not to send a message to Ukrainians, but to send a message to Americans that, hey, we have changed our government, but we're still the ally you've always known that you can always count on.
But is it all about the specter of a re-election of Donald Trump?
Exactly. And the only reason they're sending that message now, they can really so confidently send it, is because the dynamic of the elections in the U.S. has changed dramatically since the decision of Biden to step down, since Kamala Harris was staken as his stance as a candidate, as the candidate from the Democratic Party. Now, Trump has always said, it doesn't matter, we all know who he supports, but he always said that he's going to end the war just by calling Putin. Just one phone call, and Putin is like just calm down, relaxed, and in nirvana. Now, what Kamala Harris is saying is just exposing now that, and obviously this is exposing numerous.
But what matters is what matters at this point is still what Joe Biden says. He's the commander in chief. And is he going to move those red lines because he's afraid of Trump getting back in?
He's going to move them for his party. Has just as he's removed his own frailing body from the front seat and the pilot seat on that plane. He's gonna move them because if he doesn't move them, they cannot show wins. They can show wins now for the first time in a long time with Kursk, with all of these incursions into Murmansk. They can show wins and they need more wins. And more wins will depend on these decisions, which they can show more of, and they can win now the big prize, which is the presence of the United States. And that's why everybody's aligning. And yes, Germany is afraid. I bet not going to be surprised if Germany is going to align as well as a totally dependent ally on the United States.
All right. Next 54 days will indeed be interesting. Anastasia Shapochkina, I want to thank you. I want to thank Robert Parsons, Nick Holdsworth in Berlin, Hannah Schales for being with us from Odessa in Ukraine. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.